We know that when the Queensland borders open up from mid-December, that inevitably we will see COVID-19 rates spike in our state. We've been so lucky, haven't we? We've been so fortunate for so long, but everyone from the Premier on down has warned that absolutely we have to brace for the spread of COVID-19 once those borders open. There's been some good developments in terms of how do we relieve the pressure on our hospital system. We know what's happened with particularly those who are unvaccinated, what's happened with ICUs in places like Sydney Inn and Melbourne. To talk about some very recent changes, some positive developments about how we can, well, better care for positive COVID-19 patients in their own homes, very fortunate to have the President of the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, Dr. Karen Price, is on the line from a recently freed Melbourne. Dr. Karen, welcome to the King Review.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be out.
Talk to us, Karen, about some of these recent changes. The RACGP has been calling for, well, a bit of a package of measures that would help GPs care for COVID-19 positive patients in the community. Tell us about why you've been pushing and what are those changes that have just been announced.
Well, because Australians have largely stepped up and got vaccinated, and I'd still encourage Queenslanders to continue to do it, what we're expecting is that hospitals will be managing the more severe end, and that's largely going to be the unvaccinated cohorts, but that the community will probably see the milder end of the spectrum of COVID for those who have been vaccinated. And they may not even know that they've got it, but we still need to institute public health measures. So these people, we will need to monitor it. We'll need to identify them, and that'll be coordinated probably through the local public health unit. And then they're going to need to be triaged, which means they'll be sort of put into a certain pathway depending on how well they are. And then according to that categorisation, then they'll need to be managed at home, and they need to be observed. And depending on where they sit on that risk profile that is clinically determined, we will then have to interact with them, and, you know, probably by telehealth. And each patient in this cohort will need to have very clear instructions about what they need to do. And the doctors too, the GPs, will have escalation pathways should things go awry, which can happen about day 8 in some cases.
There you go. And so what are some of those measures and I guess some of the initiatives that the government has taken on board? Particularly, was interested to read about this sort of device that, you know, you put on a person's fingertip and it measures oxygen saturation. Talk to us a little bit about that and why that's so important.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people will be familiar with this. Often it gets put on your finger if you go into emergency departments, and all doctors and nurses will be familiar with it. It measures how much oxygen you've got in your circulating bloodstream. So what we do know with COVID is that that can start to drop as the disease gets worse, but you may not notice it. So this gives us, particularly in those people who may have a medium case, we can see very quickly, even though you're feeling quite well, that you're actually deteriorating and you need to be escalated. So these are really important monitoring tools that we can help to get you to care before you even know you need it, and basically intervene and help you through what may or may not happen. So that's a really important tool. And not everyone needs that, of course, because we can also monitor just based on your temperature, based on clinically how you're feeling, what you're, how fast you're breathing, how quickly you're needing to take breaths between sentences and so forth. So we're going to be able to assess you clinically just to determine just how severe your actual COVID is.
What will happen with someone who is test positive for COVID? You test positive, you don't require hospital treatment. I mean, what are the rules? Are there, you know, 14 days at home and then you have to get a check at the end of it to be allowed to be free once you've recovered? What are some of the, I guess, the details, the real world experience of someone who is being cared for at home after testing positive?
There'll definitely need to be an isolation because a COVID positive case is obviously someone who's infectious. So, and it will depend upon what kind of social supports, what sort of structures they've got at home, where they've got access to food. I mean, these are all the sorts of things that will need to be determined individually and case by case. So all of that will need to be worked through, whether they've got temperature, thermometers and that sort of thing, with the ability to use it if they don't speak English and so forth. So there's a lot of work that goes into just identifying how they will be managed at home and what sort of supports they'll need. So and that will involve the local public health unit and probably the local GP who knows them well.
It's a hugely important work for to be undertaken. And you think about parts of Queensland, including our part of the world, with some very, very low vaccination rates. I mean, particularly Indigenous communities I've been covering on this show now for a number of weeks. You know, a community down the road from us, Yarrabah, is at about half the fully vaccinated rate as, say, the city of Cairns is. So there are some real risks on the horizon once those borders open up in mid-December. So very, very important work to be done. I'm lucky to be speaking with the president of the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, Dr. Karen Price. Karen, the other quick topic before you run, the Australian Medical Association, the AMA, has again raised this issue around dispensing medicine and what should the future of dispensing medicine look like. They've spoken a lot about the role of community pharmacists and some of those, what I find really staggering, protections around the ownership of pharmacies, the restrictions on who can and can't own a pharmacy, where these pharmacies can be located. The AMA is saying that, look, for the benefit of patients, to promote competition and hopefully lower the price of some medicines and improve access as well, they're saying that, you know, we need to relook at some of these rules and regulations around the ownership of pharmacies. For listeners who may not be aware, and I'm sure many people aren't, could you just give us an overview about what are the restrictions on owning a pharmacy at the moment?
You've got to be within a certain kilometre radius of a supermarket. You've got to be a certain kilometre radius from another pharmacy. And you've basically got to be a pharmacist to own a pharmacy. And there's all sorts of rules about how many hours you should open and close and that sort of thing. So it is quite restrictive. And from a patient's point of view, it can create troubles. Like, as I mentioned to you earlier, Gavin, that, you know, in our clinic, we've got 20 doctors in an urban environment, so we'd really like to put a pharmacy in there, and we've got a willing pharmacy, and just noting that we work well with pharmacists, but we can't because of these rules, because of the radiation, you know, the radius of other clinics. So it just means it's a bit clunky, and from the, you know, I would think most patients would enjoy having the doctors and pharmacists located and working well together in the same area, so you don't have to drive all over town from doctors to pharmacists and back again. So those sorts of things are really problematic. So I think we could probably look at those and also perhaps embed pharmacy more into general practice, so we work together within the same environment. There are such things overseas as non-dispensing pharmacists, and we're always really willing, you know, pharmacists do have a level of medication expertise, and we wouldn't want to lose that. And we need to just have a think about how all of these, what we call primary care relationships, that is care in the community, how they work best from the patient's point of view. I'm not in favour of having medications easily available online in a sort of a supermarket model, mostly because that's not really safe medication care. And, you know, it's a tricky formulation. It's a professional discussion about how we manage safe care for patients, mindful that, you know, there's a trade-off between convenience and safety that we need to be very, very mindful of.
I mean, the case surely, though, would be that, for example, if there's a pharmacy within a supermarket, which has been talked about on and off, I mean, a pharmacist is still dispensing that medicine. I mean, it's not sitting on shelves for anyone to grab.
Yeah, that's right. So the pharmacist dispensing your medication is very important, and having a private area that you can discuss that medication management with the pharmacist is also very important.
Why are these rules and regulations in place in the first instance?
Look, I think there was some degree of thought that maybe you didn't want a pharmacy on every corner where it became hugely, because it is a professional service, where it became a hugely sort of corporatized or commercial kind of venture, where, you know, the professional service got swamped by the commercial intent. So what there may have been now, I think we can see the unintended consequences. So I think it's a question of just reframing and looking at that. We don't want any health service to be seen as something that is a bit like going into shop and getting whatever you want, because there is some expertise required to deliver health, and it's really important to make sure that patients receive that expertise from someone who's not operating in a commercial way, and that means that they're operating from a professional principle. So yeah, tricky stuff. It's a bit like saying, you know, you don't want an engineer to undercut the struts of your bridge, do you? So you want to make sure they're still doing their appropriate job, and that's that's the same for any professional service. Mm.
Well, it's a great debate to have. This debate around pharmacies and dispensing medicine seems to get shot down before it even starts. And, you know, I think it's great to have the debate and great to have a voice like yours in that debate as well.
Well, we need to make sure it serves patients first and foremost, and that's what we're really after.
Absolutely. Dr. Karen Price, President of RACGP, thanks so much.
Absolutely delightful to have visited Cairns, even if only over the radio waves.
Well, we welcome you with open arms from about December 17, so book your flights.
Can't wait.
Thanks for your time, Karen.
Thank you. Bye-bye.